This is The Conversation. It's episode 197 with Kate McQuillan. She is a Brooklyn-based artist, Greenpoint in specific, and she is new, still new to New York, just off the boat, so to speak, 10 months, less than a year in New York. She came from Chicago by way of a few other places and a broken marriage. And we will talk about that. We will also talk about her picking up talk therapy for the first time, which has really made a big difference. I'm a big advocate of that. You will hear that. And so much more. I'm Michael Shaw, and the website, as you know, for this show is theconversationpod.com. And this is particularly relevant because I want you to know that Kate has so generously donated to the podcast several editions of a poster that she did from an installation. It was called Nighthouse. It was originally installed in August 2015 on the facade of a two-story suburban home in Oak Park, Illinois, an image of the glittering star-filled night sky. And the poster that reflected that project is a five-screen print, six inks, glow-in-the-dark, silver, varnish, yellow, white, and a split fountain went into it. And the dimensions are 16 by 20 inches. It's printed on Nina Eclipse black paper. And you can see that image on theconversationpod.com. You can also get the details about what you need to do to donate. I'll just tell you now, it's basically $30 plus shipping. So if you are going to go via PayPal, because of their percentage taken out for payments via PayPal, I'm asking for $40 via PayPal. If you do it via Venmo or check, we'll bring it down to $37. And you can just email me for that information, or you can just pay $40 via PayPal and I will send it out to you. If you are outside of the U.S. and shipping gets a little more complicated, let me know you're interested and we will work things out shipping-wise. So don't want to exclude anybody outside of the United States by any stretch. I believe there are about 20 of them. So get your print soon before they run out. And thank you in advance for your support of the show. What else can I tell you about the conversation with Kate? I'm not only grateful for her donation, but also for her generosity and being so open and talking honestly about a lot of shit that went down in her life and going through some rough times between Chicago and New York. And so you'll hear all about that in a second. On the back end, I'll give you a little update on that whole 14th factory thing with the botched selfie situation. And yeah, talk to you more on the back end. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you in advance for your support of the show. So you are in Greenpoint.
I am.
Yeah. And how long have you been there?
I am over on the north side, kind of by the expressway and McGulrick Park.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been there?
I moved here in late September last year, and I came from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you've been there less than a year then, as we talk.
Yeah.
And what, so there's probably a big story behind your move, but before we get there, why don't you tell me how you found this place that you're in?
In
a time where Williamsburg and even Greenpoint are rather challenging neighborhoods to find places in, are they not?
Yeah. I was nervous because I had a lot of requirements sort of in my life at that time. Like, I was looking for a furnished apartment because I had sort of left Chicago without many of my things, and I also have a dog, and so I needed a dog-friendly apartment. And I really didn't know that much about Brooklyn, so I kind of, I was kind of shooting in the dark in terms of, like, my neighborhood. But somebody recommended that I look on Stephanie's List, which is sort of that lots of artists use when they have space to rent.
Is that New York? Is that a New York-centric website?
I I think it's New York centric, but it does include other cities. I think it's run by someone named Stephanie Diamond, so it may have been called something different before.
Okay.
But anyway, so I had all these sort of like things that I was looking for in an apartment, and amazingly one popped up that had, you know, all the things that I needed. So I kind of ran in to take a look at it really quickly, and it seemed pretty good. And then before I was leaving, the building manager was like, oh, by the way, he was like, there's a garage right in the front of the building. He was like, you know, you're an artist. Like, but I thought maybe I'd show it to you to see if it could be of interest. Mm-hmm. And then he like opened up this garage door, and there's this like beautiful garage with these like nice white walls and a sink. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, here's my studio.
Yeah. So you hit the jackpot.
So I signed the papers. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I got really, really lucky.
But what about affordability? I mean, clearly sounds like a great setup, but is it also below market?
Well, it wasn't when I first moved in. It was pretty much at market. And, you know, I just decided to kind of bite the bullet at first. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it was also a sublet, so I thought I'd try it out.
Right.
But since then, they have asked me to become the building manager, which gives me a little bit of a rent reduction.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Now it is below market, and it's still really expensive.
Okay, so can we talk about that? So one scenario is that you are like, all right, I'm just going to try this out. I know New York's expensive. This doesn't have to mean it's permanent. You know, I'll see what it's like, see how much damage it does to my savings, presumably, and then we'll take it from there. And then that didn't quite end up happening for very long, but then you're still in a situation where it's really expensive. So how sustainable is it for an artist just moved to New York to be in a live-work, which sounds great, in Brooklyn, that's also really expensive?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's really hard. I don't know how long I'll be able to keep it up, you know, and in some ways it feels good to kind of have like a bit of a, you know, like a bit of a fire to like keep me like working hard in the studio. But I do also have a day job, you know, that's like about 30 hours a week. So I have something stable and then something unstable
in your
in
art,
terms
you mean?
Of income.
Yeah. You mean in terms of your art being unstable income?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, so you feel like you can do this for the time being? Is that kind of where you're at with this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, last year, you know, there were a lot of big events that happened in my life, but one of them was selling a bunch of art. So that also kind of allowed me to, like gave me a cushion to make the move. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think what a lot of artists, you know, experience is these things come and go. And, you know, kind of the question is like, do you make that gamble of reinvesting in yourself, you know, when things like that happen?
Right. So the sales of the work, did they happen in Chicago or New York?
They did. They did happen in Chicago, but they were actually kind of linked to a gallery that I had been showing with in Toronto. So I also lived in Toronto briefly and was showing the gallery there. Mm-hmm. So this buyer found my work through the gallery's website, but the gallery had like just closed maybe like 2 months before. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, this gallery, who were like fantastic, had just shipped me back pretty much all of that work to my studio in Chicago, all framed. And so it was just kind of sitting in storage. And then this person was interested in purchasing like the majority of it. And so for me, it was kind of incredible because I got to, you know, keep the whole sale, which, you know, like never happened.
Right. Because the collector who bought all the work was buying it directly from you, but had But it found you through the gallery.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. It just happened to be that, like, their website, you know, had never been taken down. Like, they kind of left it active throughout the length of their, you know, contract with their web poster.
Right.
And so he spotted the work, and then he sent me this email that was sort of vague, and, you know, it kind of led me to think that maybe he wanted to buy, like, one piece of work. But then the emails continued over a number of months, and there was, like, a lot of back and forth, and I started thinking, like, wait a minute, maybe this is going to be, like, a bigger sale than I thought. And then, you know, he sent me, like, sort of this, like, official kind of, like, it wasn't a purchase order. It's, like, what comes before a purchase order, which is, I think, like, a, you know, they call it, like, some sort of a request, and it was for, I think it was more like 14 or 15 pieces of work, you know. And I, like, I was working as a screen printer at that time, and I got the email, and I just remember feeling like I was gonna, like, fall over, you know.
So it was amazing, life-changing, almost news.
Yeah I mean, it was, like, shocking, and, like, it kind of came at a point where, like, the timing really couldn't have been better for me. So it was, like, super, you know, it was super exciting, and it kind of set, you know, the wheels in motion for, like, a bunch of other changes.
So I think the big question...
So it is funny how little things can do that.
What I was about to say is the question that's coming to mind for me is, how much of that sale propelled you into New York? Or maybe really a better question that I was thinking about before is there a lot of story behind your move to New York ultimately, or was it really, does it really just come down to you wanted more opportunities as an artist, and the fact that you know, might have to pay dearly for that opportunity, you know, was just part of the bargain?
Yeah, no, it was, like, much more bigger picture than that. Like, I sort of experienced, like, a full life change, I guess I'd say. And, you know, that was kind of a central point to it, but it is, like, a much longer story. You know,
where do we start? I said, where do we start?
Well, I guess we probably start about 3 months prior to having heard from, or 3 months prior to having made that sale.
Okay.
I was working at that time, like I was just saying, as a screen printer at a gig poster shop in Chicago. That's, like, a big thing in Chicago, is, like, there's a whole little industry around, you know, it's kind of like a subset of the music industry where screen printers will, like, produce posters for bands at, like, fairly, like, large editions, you know? So, like, we would sometimes do editions of, like, 10,000. Those are for some of our, like, bigger jobs. So I had this, like, pretty rough kind of, like, you know, like, show up every day and operate a printing press sort of job. And I was also teaching a class in printmaking. You know, I was generally, like, I was hustling, and I was, like, pretty busy a lot of the time, trying to hold on to my art. I'm sorry.
Oh, so let's start again, because that word is banned from the show.
I was trying to hold on to making art.
Okay.
Because, as I said before, my gallery had just closed, and, you know, so I didn't have a lot of time to get into the studio, and things in my life were definitely, like, pretty hectic. And there were also, like, some major rumblings going on in my personal life.
Which you're being very coy about, by the way.
Very what?
Coy about, maybe?
I just don't want to, like, lay too much on you right away.
Okay, we're getting there. I got it.
Because these rumblings were, like, The rumblings were, like, heading towards, like, a major earthquake. You know, like, my marriage was falling apart, and you know, I was really wrapped up in all these other things in my life. And it all sort of started to really fall apart around, it was like the dead of winter. It was like January or sometime around then. And I guess like in most breakups, like there is some sort of turning point where, you know, you kind of hit some realization, and that was kind of where I was at then.
What was the realization?
That like this, you know, 15-year relationship was coming to an end. And yeah, I think, you know, I think I was in a bit of shock and denial at that point.
Okay, let me jump in, because a couple minutes ago, you said something to the effect of, "And I had a lot going on." What do you remember that? Mm-hmm. What did you mean by that? Because you made it sound like my marriage was starting to fall apart, or I realized it was falling apart or ending. And I had all this other stuff going on. So what did you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I maybe meant that in relationship to, you know, the fact that I had these two jobs, like I was working a lot. I may have also, you know, I think that was maybe part of like the denial, you know, in terms of like maybe hiding from this other problem that was like a much, you know, like a really serious problem. But it was kind of so hard for me to grasp that I sort of buried myself in my work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, which I think that tends to happen when these kinds of things are so huge in terms of like beginning to grapple with. So that was kind of where I was at. It was like winter. I was in this sort of state of like, you know, shock and denial when things like really started heading south. And, you know, I didn't really know what to do. I couldn't quite reach out to my family, although they were trying to help, but like I wasn't really there yet. And, you know, I had some friends who I was able to talk to, but I really felt like I needed someone who could help me professionally. And so at that point, I started, you know, trying to find a therapist to talk with about all of these problems. So, you know, in addition to like working these two jobs and having this like major conflict going on, I also kind of launched into this like process of trying to, you know, get into therapy and talk with someone to try to figure out like how I could handle like all of this change.
Mm-hmm. What was going on practically speaking when you, cause I'm still a little hazy on this breakup scenario in terms on a practical level, at least, was there a point, was it gradual in terms of the living situation, you know, or did one of you just leave?
Yeah, no, that's a good question in terms of painting the picture. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't like that was the first time that we'd talked about it. Like, I think going back, you know, 6 or 8 months, even there had been discussion. So it wasn't like a total, like it came out of nowhere. And when I started like really trying to deal with things, like we were still living together and we were still actively like talking about all the problems and like, you know, we were working on it. It wasn't like a major, it wasn't as though, you know, we both just like jumped ship or mm-hmm. anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I had never really done any sort of talk therapy or anything before, but it really felt like the only thing I could do. And so I remember like, you know, just Googling like therapists and kind of picking the first person that came up. And I went to this one like terrible session, And, you know, this guy, like, he might have been great for some people, but we just weren't a fit. You know, it really, like, it wasn't, like, quite working for me. But even at that, I remember feeling like it was a major help. So I did that one session. I was like, okay, I got to find somebody else. And then I found this woman who, like, the moment I started talking to her, like, it felt perfect. And she was a huge part of this whole change.
Mm-hmm. So let's back up for a second. So did you not have anybody in your life who actually recommended talk therapy to you? Did you just come up with the idea on your own?
I think initially I was like, I knew that I had to talk to someone, but then there was someone who reinforced that for me.
A friend?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
But your friend didn't have any advice as to where you should get started. So you were led to just doing a random search online.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, looking back, I remember feeling at that time, you know, just really at like a loss of what to do. And like, I hate to use the word crisis because like, you know, like it was a personal crisis, you know, it wasn't like, anything bigger than that. But I really remember feeling like, if I didn't get to talk with someone, I really didn't know, you know, what was going to come next.
Yeah. Well, that was a good sort of emotional intelligence and instinct, you know, to be able to make that happen.
Yeah.
So was the woman then that you ended up with who you really connected with, was she the second one, the third one? How many did you see before? She was the second?
She was the second. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like I just got really, really lucky.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't really have any expectations. I didn't really know like how it was supposed to work. And mostly what we were talking about really was not so much like my relationship problems, but we were more just like talking about me, you know, and like my role.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from the beginning, what I liked about it was that it felt like she was trying to help me help myself, like rather than she was just trying to fix my problems, you know, like the onus was on me to do the work, which was hard, but it made me feel better because it was like, it was up to me. And I knew that like, I wasn't dependent on somebody else to make these changes.
Right. So what was, if not one big takeaway from what you learned about yourself from talking to her, what were the big takeaways, if not one?
Oh man, so many.
Well, let's narrow it. Well, why don't we narrow it down? What did you realize about your relationship, about your marriage?
Well, you know, I guess I started to recognize like patterns, you know, like places where, you know, where maybe if something didn't sit right with me, like my instinct would be to, you know, either gloss over it or, you know, not address it, and just kind of chalk it up, like, you know, as though it was just like a small battle that I didn't want to fight. But then I started to see that, like, I kind of was just never fighting any battles. And so that was kind of tough to recognize, like, about myself. You know,
do you think you could illustrate that a little bit with an example, maybe? Because that feels a little abstract.
I can't think of any like specific instances or anything like that. But,
okay.
You know, just like generally voicing your opinion and, you know, not being afraid to disagree.
Do you think?
I think I always thought that fighting was unhealthy, but like now I'm starting to see that like fighting in relationships, you know, is probably not only healthy but necessary.
Mm. So were you avoiding, did you tend to avoid conflicts in your relationship?
Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that you grew up with?
Oh, sorry?
Is that something you grew up with, avoiding conflict?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you start to see how those things pass down. So my sense is that in your relationship, a lot of things, probably towards the first half, perhaps, or maybe even longer, just were really naturally went well, and then all of a sudden they didn't. And you had to reconcile with things like actually having conflict and disagreement and things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that is a good descriptor. And, you know, I don't know if, like, that's just, like, sort of life change. You know, it could be so many things. But, yeah, it was such a natural and easy and comfortable relationship for so long that it was almost just like I didn't have the tools to begin to, like, deal with it when it was no longer that way.
Right. So is there one other than the things that you just described, is there one other big takeaway that comes to mind that you learned from talking things through? Let me ask you this before you continue. To what extent did talking things through and learning more about yourself and what you maybe wanted or needed lead to leaving Chicago for New York?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the amazing thing about it was that I was learning all these things about myself right at a time when I really, really needed to know how to, you know, make those changes. And so that was like one thing that was happening. But then simultaneously, I also had a lot of opportunities come my way. So between, like, you know, I felt like I just had all these curveballs that were being thrown at me. And it was like for the first time in my life, I really felt like I had, you know, like the baseball bat to, like, hit them with, you know?
Okay, wait a second.
And, like, it felt amazing.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that you had a bat that, you know, you could finally swing and make contact. But it begs the question, what were there other curveballs other than the relationship falling apart that you are alluding to?
Yeah, so that was happening. And then the art sale stuff started to unfold. And that was literally all happening simultaneously. You know, like, I would go from, you know, working my day job for like 10-hour days, you know, commuting home, getting home, drawing up, like, you know, a bill of sale or something that I'd never done before in my life. And, mm-hmm. you know, being, like, set up as a vendor for a corporation, and then, like, going to therapy and then having these intense conversations. Like, those things were all happening. And then I got an opportunity to interview for a new job. Mm-hmm. And that was just like, it felt like there were so many things to juggle.
Is that?
But I also, like, I had to do it all, you know, like, I felt like there was no choice otherwise.
Is that by any chance the job you're referring to, the one that you're doing now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
okay.
So the amazing thing about this job is that it's work from home.
Right.
So it was a job where if I took it, I could move and do it from anywhere. So, you know, I'm like in the situation where I'm like in first of all, I don't want to, like, skip over the fact that, like, I was still really depressed and, like, kind of barely holding on. Like, I kind of felt like a robot at this point in my life. Like, all these things were exciting and fun, but it was almost like I couldn't feel any joy or happiness, you know, even about, like, the art sale. So I was, like, barely getting through these things, but I could see at the end that there was this potential picture of the art sale going through, you know, interviewing for and getting this job, and then potentially being able to go anywhere and start over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it sounds like you felt like you could start anywhere and you might as well start somewhere where you have the most, I guess, opportunity in a sense. And also that you had this momentum from the sale that gave you the maybe the confidence as well to go there.
Yeah, exactly. So there was like a period where, like, you know, I had the second interview lined up and the art sale, I think, like, still hadn't quite gone through yet. And I was like still deep in the midst of like the breakup. And at that point, it felt like it could all like fall apart. But then I just had to like continue to take the steps to just try to make it all happen. And then, you know, amazingly, it all did.
Yeah. And so to get back to being in New York, so you basically, as you use the expression, I think, towards the beginning, bite the bullet, you know, so you just decided to go for it. How much fear or what's the expression I'm looking for? How much cautiousness did you have at the same time as that you were like, I'm going to go for it?
Well, so it took a little bit longer than that. Just in terms of like the move, because I didn't go straight from Chicago to New York. I left Chicago, I think, in like March. And at that point, I was like pretty wrecked. And so I went and stayed with family for like 2 months and I kind of like checked out for a little while, just in terms of like, you know, being social. Like I really needed a lot of time to process like what had happened. And so at that point, I remember I was living outside of New York in Connecticut. I was about an hour outside the city and I wanted to move to New York, but I remember at that point, I didn't feel like I had the more like the capability, you know, like I'd had that one sale, but you know, I just wasn't quite there yet. So I went to Boston for 2 months to try it out, because it was kind of like, it's my hometown, and I sort of knew it. But then when I got to Boston, the art buyer contacted me again and placed a second order that was like...
After the first order being like a bunch of work?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And at that point, I was like, okay, fuck it. I'm moving to New York.
So let's talk about, can we talk about this collector for a second? Where is this collector based?
They're actually a big corporation. It's Saks Fifth Avenue.
Interesting. But is there not a curator or, you know, acquisition director or whatever they're called that makes these kinds of purchases? Or is it a group of people?
So when I was saying collector, that's what I meant. He's like their art acquisitions person.
Right, right.
So, and you know, it's like, I guess, you know, they're kind of viewed as like assets in addition to the fact that they, you know, have them around in their offices and private dressing rooms and things like that. And he like, he kind of felt like, you know, like a fairy godmother or something. Like he just kept appearing like in these like moments, you know, where like I didn't know what was next and then he showed up.
Did he have any awareness of what was going on your end?
No.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So he is like a fairy godmother in that story.
Yeah. It was like truly, truly bizarre.
Where is the work that he's purchased for Saks Fifth Avenue? Where is it going to go?
I know that some of it is here at like their, they have like a, I think their corporate headquarters are in New York. The second sale I actually had to, I opted to deliver the second sale myself. So I went to the location, and that was a funny experience because, like, I had to deliver this work to this building that was under construction and, like, down near Wall Street. And at that point, I didn't live in New York yet, so, like, I didn't really know where I was going, and I had to like show up at this at this like construction site in my SUV, and like, you know, tell them that, like, I had to like show them a bill of lading and be like, I'm here to make a delivery, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else who's showing up for deliveries has been like, you know, trucks, and they're like, you know, employed by like some company, but
right.
Like I just kind of showed up on my own, and I was like, I'm here with like, you know, 15 pieces of art in the like stuffed into the back of my Subaru.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And did they let you take them in then?
Sorry?
They let you take them in then. And that was that.
Yeah. 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 They had to, you know, check my ID and mm-hmm. like write down all my information. And then
right.
they let me into the building, and I like drove way, way down and then took an elevator like way down to some storage facility. It was kind of an interesting experience to see a building in New York like that.
Are you going to see the work installed at some point?
I'm not sure if I have access to those areas. I think it's like a lot of times they're in these private,
mm-hmm.
private areas where they bring, I don't know. I think it might be like the personal shoppers areas.
Mm.
I don't think you can see it from the street.
Right. Right. Okay. Got it. Well, let's bail out of this investigation and go back if it's okay with you to the transition period, because a couple of things sort of stuck out to me about that. One is that you were in Connecticut, as you said, sort of lying low, and you were you mm-hmm. said you were processing it. And I wondered, mm-hmm. one of the first things I wondered is, are you, so after having dived so deep with therapy, were you able to figure out how to process it by yourself, you know? And then secondly, and you can answer this or you can sort of storytell this however you want, but then there was being in Boston, was that like sort of like baby steps, you know, to try out before going to New York? And my understanding of Boston, because I had a Boston dealer on the podcast a while back, is that it's such a small art community. I guess it's a very tight art community, but the mm-hmm. galleries there struggle so much because the lure and the pull, the magnetism of New York is so close.
Of New York. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think the way that you put it with baby steps is, I think I used that phrase many times.
Right.
You know, so being in Connecticut, and processing, it was hard to leave my therapist, to be honest with you. Like,
mm-hmm.
And we did do a couple sessions, I think, like over Skype.
Mm-hmm.
She was really great mm-hmm. about all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a couple people there that I could talk to. You know, it's funny, like I live right downtown in Chicago, like in the Loop. And like, I lived in like a big loft building, you know, and it was like really like an urban environment. And then like, you know, suddenly I was in this like leafy suburb in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right.
And it was like a real shock in addition to all the like emotional shock, you know, just like the change of environment. But like, I also don't really think I could have handled anything other than that. So, you know, my sister-in-law and my brother were really great to talk to. And then, you know, I kind of like befriended like the neighbors. They would like come over and hang out on the porch. And
wow,
like it just was really like really low key. And also at that point I hadn't, I left Chicago so fast that I didn't really say goodbye to a lot of my friends. So I had a lot of phone calls to make once I got
mm-hmm.
there. So mm-hmm. I did a lot of catching up with friends over the phone.
Right.
And so I was still talking, you know, but not really like quite on the same level as I was with my therapist. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't in great shape at that point to be like, you know, just totally honest with you. Like all of the stuff that happened, like really, really was, you know, just there was still like a lot of pain and, you know, like physically, like I was like real thin and like, you know, it was, a period of time where just I really had to like take it easy. And you know, people say that they're like, you know, take time for yourself. And,
right.
But like, I really had to, like, I just couldn't do much else. But the good thing there was that I started my new job like a week after I got to Connecticut. So I had that to dive into.
Right. It sounds like you sort of getting back to the story, you know, angle of all of this, that you left Chicago abruptly. What was the reason for that?
Well, I mean, at that point, you know, it kind of became an issue of like we weren't living together anymore. And so it was like, you know, either I was going to have to rent an apartment there, or, you know, do something else. And like, it just kind of made sense to leave and be near my family. So, it was, I mean, it was abrupt in terms of like, you know, under normal circumstances, you don't make a move in your life over the course of like 4 weeks. But on the other hand, like, it wasn't as though like he and I totally abandoned everything and just like, you know, totally bailed. Like, we were having conversations and there was closure and there were goodbyes. It just all happened like really, really fast. But yeah, there came a day when like, you know, I was teaching a printmaking class and like it was on Friday afternoons and like, you know, the class ended at 4:45 and instead of going straight home like I normally would, like instead I went and I got like a one-way rental car and went to my house and put my stuff in the car and then just like left. So that was surreal.
Is your ex living in the loft that you guys shared now?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's still there. Yeah.
Is he an artist?
He was. He was.
That's how you guys met?
Which is how we met.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We met in college. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys got together. I mean, I don't want to overanalyze because I know you've probably done. I mean, this is for the sake of the listener, I suppose, since you've obviously
right.
talked about it quite a bit already. But it sounds, without, you know, overanalyzing it and overemphasizing any of it, it does sound like you guys got together very young. You grew, you know, as adults, which happens when people get together very young, and then you're kind of you're different people by the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, of course, there's like, you know, many, many other things, but that does feel true. You know, like when you put it that way, I do think in many ways that's the story. And it does happen to a lot of people. So, you know, it was kind of important to me when all of it was going on to be like, okay, wait, like, you know, like you're not alone. Like this happens to lots and lots of people.
Of
course, it doesn't really feel that way when you're in it. You know, you're like, everything about it seems like really specific and, you know, like it's your failure. But
hopefully your therapist was telling you that that wasn't the case.
She was telling me, she was like, you didn't fail, the relationship failed. You know, like that's the classic thing that they say. And I remember the first time she said that to me, I was like, no, I was like, I don't buy that at all. You know? But then over time, like it did start to feel true. And like, I came around, I was like, yeah, like I get now what she was saying.
Right. Well, that's good that you were, it's really good that you were open-minded enough to be able to come around like that. That's a good
sign.
It took a while. Yeah, but better later than never.
Right.
So was Boston then, it sounds like it was just a couple months. What was there any kind of something substantial learned from or was it more like a transition kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean a bit of both. Like I went back there cuz I had a couple old friends. And actually it's kind of interesting. A couple of the people who really, really helped me were my professors from undergrad, who I'd like stayed in touch with But they were really important for me to reconnect with because, like, I felt like they knew me as an artist, and they've known me for a long time, and they knew me, you know, kind of back when my relationship with him started. So it was kind of like, in some ways, going back to Boston, it's kind of like picking up where I had left off. You know, oddly, not that you can ever do that, but like, it was sort of like, I kind of felt like I was back there and I was like touching base with who I was at, you know, like at that time. So yeah, so Boston as kind of like the next step, like getting outside of this circle of family, you know, Boston was kind of like into a circle of like old friends and like really trusted, relationships.
Right. And so then you were nourished and then you were like, okay, I'm going to go to New York now. Or presumably, you got that, you sort of set up at least the beginnings of that place that you're in now before you left for New York, I would imagine.
So I was like, I was in Boston for like a month. It was a sublet and, you know, I was really enjoying it. And at that point I was like starting to like feel a lot better. Like, you know, they say like in this like 7 stages that you go through, but like, you know, after depression, there's like the upward turn. And I remember really distinctly feeling that upward turn when I was in Boston. And I think it also kind of came, that kind of came about at the time that I started like dating again. You know, like that was kind of like the best medicine.
When did that start?
Like I felt kind of normal again. And
when did that start?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did you? Maybe like late July or something like that. Like it was, you know, maybe like I'd been back for maybe like 3 months or something at that point.
So it was less than a half year since the end of your situation.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was like dating at like kind of the most basic level.
Right. Okay.
You know, it was like baby steps. And I remember being like horrified at the thought of like starting dating again. You know, just after like having been out of it for so long, like to think about just like any aspect of it. Like it felt weird to even like sit at a table across from someone else for a while there. Like there were so many things that like just had an echo of like, you know, being surreal, really like it took me a little while to let go of. But then, you know, like once I did, I was like, okay, like this is, you know, this is pretty fun.
Have you been using any dating apps or what have you?
No, no. That's like the next big hurdle.
so you're meeting people in person.
I mean, I've done like blind dates and stuff like that. Like I'm using my way towards it.
Right. Sure. Got it. So you've been in New York for what? 10 months? Is it something like that? Is that right?
Yes.
So do you feel like it's been enough time to sort of get a sense of things, you know, or are you still obviously learning the ropes and, you know, whatnot? What would you tell an artist who has just moved to New York? What would you tell them?
Well, you know, I would probably tell them that people here are like a lot friendlier than you might expect, and lots of artists are really open to, you know, studio visits and things like that. I landed here like in September, and it took me a little while to get the studio set up, and so I haven't really started taking studio visits myself until like just recently. But I have been really, you know, like surprised by how, you know, like responsive people are. So that's one thing, you know, that I would recommend. And then, you know, the other thing that I've really tried to do is, you know, just get out there and see work and then just show up to as many things as you can. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think that holds true anywhere, not just New York.
Mm-hmm. How many openings would you say you go to a week?
Oh, I mean...
Or month.
I don't think I'm like that good. Yeah, I'd say like monthly. I probably go to, well, maybe just like 2 a month, I'd say. But I go out to, you know, I'd say I'd see shows at least like, you know, 10 or 12 galleries a month. Mm-hmm. I usually do at least a few mm-hmm. like big gallery days where I'll try to make it around.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But I am still learning, you know, kind of where everything is. And, you know, that just takes a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And are you feeling more settled than being in New York?
Yeah. Yeah. So like kind of the next like big step that sort of came in my life was like, you know, I got here and then I got the studio set up and I was feeling pretty good, but, you know, I think I kind of got to like a next phase where like a lot of the adrenaline of all the change had worn off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of an interesting point because, that was kind of like really, that was when reality hit, you know, it's like suddenly like all this like drama and excitement kind of went away. And I was like left with like realizing that, you know, this was my new life and thinking about what that life was going to be like. And that was like a really hugely overwhelming question.
Mm-hmm.
Like a hugely overwhelming question. And so like my, you know, my instinct was just to get into the studio. And so, I decided to try like getting onto a schedule, like a really like disciplined schedule. And so my day job does kind of allow for that since it's like, I can kind of work at any time. So for, I guess it was like my New Year's resolution, actually,
mm-hmm.
it sounds really corny, but like I just set a schedule for mm-hmm. myself mm-hmm. and I was like, if I can follow this every day for like 3 weeks, then it's going to become like a, you know, habit. And so the schedule was to like get up and be in the studio in the garage by 9 and then work from like 9 to 1 and then like move into my day job and like work my day job from like 1 to 7 and then break for a little bit and then get back into the studio from like 8 to like 11.
Wow.
So really long days, but you know, six hours a day in the studio. And, you know, I decided to try to keep that Monday through Thursday and then like let the weekends be a little looser. And so
mm-hmm.
I just did that. And now it's still my schedule. Like it's just become what my life is like.
You said 6 hours. It's actually 7 hours. If you want to get technical.
Is it 7?
Yeah. You said 9 to 1 and
oh,
then,
right.
and then
to
8
1.
To 11.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that hard? What is that like working 8 to 11? That shift must be,
mm-hmm.
you know, because when everybody else is doing whatever, you know, it's kind of psychologically hard to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, part of this was like getting into the studio and making work. But the other part was like at night trying to avoid like feeling lonely or like sad.
Right.
You know? Like
right.
the end of the day, like when I used to come home and like hang out, you know, like, I don't have that in my life anymore as like something to count on every day. You know, mm-hmm. like I do take breaks and I'll go hang out with friends some nights, you know, it's not like I'm like totally unbending in that, but you know, I did really feel like I wanted to make sure that I was occupied during like a time of day when it could be really easy to like get sad or like feel bad for myself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sure.
And so that nighttime shift actually isn't that hard because like the alternative is like not very appealing either. And so a lot of times I allow the nighttime shift to be like the fun time when I just allow myself to draw.
Oh, okay.
Like
uh-huh.
I'm, you know, less in like production mode,
right.
But
right.
more, you know, like the creative time where you're letting yourself like play or come up with new ideas. And,
right.
Um, the morning slot is usually more for like, you know, if I'm going to be screen printing or like doing something technical.
What about, so you've just described the strategy to dive into to making work to an extent to avoid or to stave off, you know, loneliness, depression, what have you. What about looking into picking up with therapy again?
No, that is something that I am definitely interested in doing. Like, I'm still at the point right now where I'm figuring out like a lot of like logistics in my life. So I just haven't been able to settle down and find someone yet, but I do think it's really important to keep up with it. Because I'm still like, there's still things that I'm realizing. You know, you go through these like phases. I was talking before about like the upward turn, like when you're moving out of like depression, and then, you know, you get into like reconstruction of your life. And I think I'm pretty solidly in that phase still. But I don't totally know if I've made it all the way to like acceptance. Just because it takes a really long time, and like it's hard to see things like until you have a little bit of distance, like a little bit of hindsight. And so I know that, like, you know, I'm not totally through it yet. So yeah, there will be a point where I'll need to pick back up.
I don't mean to be Budinsky, but it sounds like you're procrastinating a little bit.
No, I mean, like, actually, the reason is just that I don't have New York State healthcare yet.
Well, there's low fee therapy. You know, there's not only low fee therapy, but there's also a program now. I don't know if it's called an app per se, but it's a online therapy program where you can.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can either text, call, and or Skype with your therapist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, that is good to know.
I'll tell you about it. I will tell you about it post recording.
Okay.
I don't want you to feel like you have to.
Enough,
I don't want you to feel like you have to have health care to get therapy, because that's a myth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. You're such an advocate.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I want to revisit for a moment that period that you described when you, the honeymoon sort of, or the adrenaline actually was the word that you used. The adrenaline had faded and you were like, oh, this is my new life. I kind of pictured as you were saying that, like you looked around New York and you were like, oh, this isn't quite the fantasy, you know, go-go place that I originally saw it as, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like January, you know, like it was like
right
the dead of winter,
right.
And right. I, you know, I remember feeling like just kind of like floundering a bit, and you know, I think we all have those moments in life anyway. Like, it doesn't have to be that like you've just gone through some big change or anything like that. Like, we can all sort of like have those moments where we're like, oh, what am I doing here? You know,
sure.
But yeah, I mean, I think kind of what made that all change was just like, you know, taking some action and turning the studio into the focus. And of course, that always like leads to something else. You know, it's like you take one step and then something you never would have thought would have come from it, you know, comes up. And so like, you know, for me, it was like taking this step of setting the schedule and just making sure that I did the schedule every day.
Yeah.
And then I like kind of came across like a new technique. And then all I wanted to do was like work on that technique, you know? So like, I didn't anticipate that I was going to have something really, really new and different happen in my artwork, but then sure enough it did. And so then that was really the thing that I kind of ran with, and have been doing ever since.
Right.
You know, I guess like I also have a fear of like, you know, what am I going to do when that runs out? And like, I'm trying to like, that's something that I think is going to be you know, difficult is like, I can't like continue to think about like my life in terms of these like steps, like, you know, at some point when this is like all totally over, like it's no longer going to be, that I'm taking steps. Like it's just that I'll, you know, be living in like the present.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It sounds like you are to a large extent, actually.
Yeah.
So your benefactors, as it were, whose home you are staying in, who are in Nebraska except for some of the summer, we're recording now at the beginning of August. When are they coming back this summer or not?
Actually, no. They decided not to come back this summer after the whole, you know, winter. I was planning on leaving for like July and August, but they are both pretty active artists, and they had too many shows going on this summer, and they just had all these commitments. So they were back for like a week, but that was it. And so I've just been able to stay and continue on.
That's great.
And so that's been really nice. I also was able to kind of take advantage of like the good weather here because I'm doing a lot of screen printing and I've scaled up my work and now I'm able to like wash out my screens in my backyard. I also have
nice.
A backyard, which is fantastic.
Wow.
So I was able to kind of like expand what I was doing by staying here during the warm weather months. And so that felt really good. In terms of like not having to stop, you know, I was able to just keep going. And I have a solo show opening in like 3 weeks. So this was actually really key work time for me.
Good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so let's do a little promoting. Where is it? When is it opening?
It's in Chicago at a gallery called Goldfinch.
Okay. Got it.
And it opens August 26th.
All right. Well, this will come out before that. So so you may get two extra people show up.
Good. Yeah, it's good timing.
So when your subletters came for the week, do you just stay like in the little guest area or what? Do you have to bail for a week?
I had to bail, but I just went and visited family. My family's all in New England, so
it
really was not a
big deal. Yeah.
That big of a deal.
Right.
So yeah. And so they may come back, you know, they may pop in for like holidays here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think I'm pretty flexible with all of that. So, you know, I'm happy to have this relationship with them where, they seem to trust me to, you know, to take care of things here. And, you know, in exchange, I have like this pretty amazing setup where there's not only like the garage and the backyard, but there's also like a basement filled with all of their tools. You know, since they're artists, they were like, you know, if you need to borrow like a saw or something, they're like, you can just go down to the basement. So it's really funny. It's like, I'm living in New York in this like super urban environment, but I really feel like I'm living in a home more so than any other apartment I've had in the past.
Yeah, having to bail for a week or a weekend or whatever here and there, or even a month next year, seems totally worth it considering the setup that you have. And I would say that you being a newbie, you know, or newcomer to New York, have a better setup than people who have been there, you know, for decades, probably.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, so here's the question. Have you ever had conversations in the short time that you've been there with people who are, you know, like crammed into a crappy Bushwick apartment or whatever, and they find out your situation and get really pissed at you?
Yeah. I mean, but still, my rent is really like expensive. Like a lot of people who are in that situation, at least they have like roommates or something. And so when I do tell them what I pay, they're like, oh yeah, you know?
Right. Do they say, how do you do
that?
So that
is, you know, it is always the trade-off. And sometimes I'm like, you know, I probably could save some money by living in a studio. But I just don't know if it doesn't really seem like it would be worth the trade-off. Cause it does seem like, you know, studios are so crazy expensive. Like studio spaces are so expensive.
Sure.
So, you know, I think it's actually more like the studio is the thing that I'm getting the big deal on rather than like the apartment itself.
Right. Right. Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. It does seem like a lot of people who like are able to stay here for a long time do have some sort of situation that's either luck or that they've constructed mm-hmm. that allows them to like subsidize their studio
yeah.
situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Right.
And that's been kind of interesting to learn about, you know, like a lot of this stuff, like I am finding out actually through podcasts like your own, mm-hmm. you know, where you do get to listen to artists talk about the logistics around how they make things happen for the amount of time that they do. And, you know, you start to see like how those things compound over time and, you know, lead them to the next thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like in terms of art making, you know, one of the most interesting things about coming to New York has been like getting the bigger picture of the lifestyle that goes along mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And to that point, do you feel like there is, despite the picture of you, you know, working kind of in a remote psychological space in a way, mm-hmm. you know, particularly at night, that time you're trying to sort of work to replace the loneliness mm-hmm. or what have you. Do you feel like there's an energy, you know, that cliche, that horrible cliche about the energy of New York, but still nonetheless, do you feel like there's a sort of a groundswell of energy that is informing the, you know, your motivation and that kind of thing?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's maybe just like knowing that there are other people out there that are doing the same thing that just are within close proximity, you know,
yeah.
like
yeah.
when I'm sitting working in my studio, I'm like, okay, I can probably think of like four or five other friends who are doing the same thing in their studio.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it makes you feel like you're not really like alone.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, yeah, well, yeah. maybe I'll have a studio visit with them in the next like couple weeks and I'll see what mm-hmm. they're doing mm-hmm. over this, you know, little chunk of time. And that is a good feeling. And it's different than like when I was in Chicago, like, you know, maybe I didn't know enough artists there or something, but it felt a lot more isolated there.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I did Greenpoint Open Studios this spring,
okay.
Which is like, you know, a community event where somebody organizes to get all the artists to open their doors
mm-hmm.
and they produce a map. And so I just, you know, I remember getting the map and being like, oh, like, look, there's all these people, you know, like two blocks away, three blocks away. And here's like a key to who they all are. And that was great. And I've already done, you know, some studio visits with people who I just, you know, saw on the map.
How does that work that you're, so was your studio open during this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. So my garage, how do you, just like, you know, I just open up the garage door.
Right. And how, but how do you go and see other studios while your studio is open, or does that not happen?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You kind of have to like have somebody sit and watch
right.
your space
right.
or just not be open during that time. Yeah. I wish I'd gotten out to see more people's
right,
spaces.
Right, right. Got it.
But it was a pretty busy and big event, and I kind of, you know, I wanted to stick it out and meet as many people as I could.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a really wonderful event, and like I think there's something, I don't know, there's hundreds of studios that participate.
Sure, I would think so. Yeah, that's why you're that's why you're all there.
Right, right.
So, Kate, how do you feel right now?
Good, good. I feel like, you know, we covered a lot of things.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you feel like I was fair to you?
Actually, I do. I do.
Okay, good.
I mean, you were digging deep at some points.
could have dug deeper, but that's okay. There's always more to dig, believe it or not.
It's always good to talk, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me and for the tips on low cost therapy.
Yeah, we will. Right. Well, I suppose we could share that with the listeners as well, but, I'll have to get the name before we go. So, Yeah.
Right.
All right. And we're out. Many thanks again to Kate McQuillan for putting it out there and for generously donating those posters. And wanted to let you know about her show, which is opening August 26th, Saturday. That's in Chicago at the gallery, Goldfinch Gallery. The show is called Meet Me on the Astral Plane. It's a great title for a show. It's going to go through the end of September. So if you are in Chicago, if you can't make the opening, hopefully you will. Tell her this conversation sent you. But if you don't, go check out the show between when the show opens, the 26th, and September 31st. And thank you in advance for that. All right, so I'm going to let you know briefly about the 14th Factory post-selfie disaster. First, just want to remind you that, a great way to support the podcast is to buy one of these prints for a pretty affordable price. If you do, I will also hook you up with the bonus episodes, 3 of them so far, more to come. So jump on that deal if you can. People who have donated that in the past and just gotten the bonus episodes did not get the posters. So jump on that, become one of the poster owners. Signed. Did I mention that before? And otherwise, if you're not interested in the poster, you can still support the show either financially by becoming a monthly supporter on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. $3 a month, though, will get you the bonus episodes and so on. And my lifelong love of you. You can also support one time via PayPal if you're not interested in the poster, you just want to support the show. I also recently received a check in the mail, which has been a very long time since that happened, and that was very cool to see one of my listeners' handwriting on the envelope and get a nice little handwritten note with it. I will thank that person once I get their permission to be thanked on the show, but I want to let you know that happened. You can, of course, also support the show by following on social media at Artist Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Become a fan on Facebook. You can leave a nice review not only on iTunes, but also on places like Google Play. I believe people are leaving reviews there. Kate Mitchell, our producer, alerted me to that. And by the way, I should have mentioned this earlier, Kate herself bought one of these Kate McQuillan posters. She's already giving her time an effort to the show, and so she obviously endorses the poster. So one more plug for the poster. And one more thing, in case you haven't heard me say this already, if you would like to recommend me to other podcasts, that would be an opportunity for us to spread the word beyond this platform, beyond this audience space. So if you know of any other podcasts where I might be a good fit as a guest or co-host or what have you, just reach out to those people. Let me know you're doing it, and I will thank you. All right, so before we go quickly, I told you last week, if you didn't listen, or I told you a couple weeks ago in the Matthew Gardocki episode about the botched selfie that you may not have been familiar with that happened here in LA at a nonprofit project gallery called 14th Factory. And it was a show of a British artist who was basically behind Simon Birch, if I'm not remembering that right, I apologize. Simon, I believe, is his first name. And you can just do a search if you haven't already. 14th Factory Gallery, selfie mishap, something like that. And you will see a YouTube video of the mishap taking place because it was caught on the security cameras. I enjoyed that. I know it's a little gruesome in a way, but a little maybe sadistic, borderline sadistic, but I think you'll enjoy it because it's so confusing. You don't know which person taking a selfie to look at before the mishap happens. Anyway, all that to say that Daniel Gerwin, an artist here in LA, and I went to go try and see that show, and this calls back a couple of things from that Matthew Gardocki episode. One, we tried to go and see the show. We could not. Two, Matthew, in the conversation with Deb and I, talked about how there are these many gallery websites now where the information is vague, the hours are vague. So that's what we experienced trying to find out information as to whether the show was still open at 14th Factory. And Daniel called the number, and he got a answering message from a lovely-sounding British woman. And that did not really help either. So we just drove over there. We were in downtown anyway. And it had ended. The show had ended. There was a security guy. There was a security guard outside who said it had ended like a week ago. And then there was some guy. I think he might have been British. It could have been Simon. It could have been the guy. But he was very standoffish and like, you know, don't even begin to ask me questions. I realized I should have said, are you the guy whose work got damaged, $200,000 worth of damage? How did you come up with that estimate? But these are all the things that you think of after the fact to say, to engage somebody in conversation about. So alas, we went, we did not see, and we did not conquer. And so that's what happened at 14th Factory. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Let us know what you thought of this episode and or any others. Thanks so much again to Kate for generously donating her prints. And thank you guys for listening to the show. I am about to leave for another week out of town. Wish me well in travels. That's always the most challenging part, the getting to and from. But I say that just to say that this is being recorded over a week before it comes out, actually. So if I missed any big news, I apologize, but there is big news to miss out on every week. It now isn't there. All right. ITMFA, thank you guys for listening, and I will talk to you in a couple weeks. Ciao for now.